This is episode 53 of Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake. All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Starz. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I got smoked this week by the listeners. They did not like my assessment of Jamie and the scene with Murtaugh, and how I felt like Jamie was being a little douchey.
Wow, that's a terrible word. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I felt like he was being a little douchey to Murtaugh. That's his godfather. That's his bro.
But he's also his laird.
Yeah, no, I
get
that.
Oh, he's not
that.
His laird. Well, kind of.
Well, you know, he is, because he's part of that clan, I suppose. But I'll get into this later when somebody comments on it.
Okay, but you just got hated. You didn't get hated on. You got
I didn't get hated on, but people were like, hey, bro, like, relax on Jamie. And I don't think they appreciated it all that much. But that's okay. It happens. That's why I am who I am. I like to stir the pot.
Yes, you
do. I like to hit the bee's nest.
You do.
You know? It incites good conversation. My love, we got some announcements. What do you got for me?
All right. So, just a reminder, if you want to like keep talking Outlander all week long, because I sure do, and don't know where to go, and you just can't get your fix, I want you just to type into Facebook Outlander Cast Clan Gathering. Now, this is a public group. The great thing about groups is that you really see it a lot in your news feed, and you get to really join in some fun conversations. So this is where we're going to be posting different things. We're going to pull a lot of our listener feedback from this clan gathering group. So make sure that you are in the Outlander Cast Clan Gathering.
Right, and
Facebook.
actually, you can get to the Facebook group from outlandercast.com. I have like a little button on the sidebar for the Outlander Cast fan group. I'm sorry, Outlander Cast Clan Gathering Facebook group on there. So if you just click it, it'll take you right to it. And you can also see it at the Outlander Cast blog as well.
And we also wanted to let you know that the iTunes reviewing is still going on.
If
you
review
and you send us, so if you write a review and you send us a snail, if you send us an email with your snail mail address saying that you reviewed us with your username, I'm going to mail you a card. And don't worry, if you live in a different country, all you Canadians, the Canadians are representing.
Yes, they are.
Our Canadian listeners have been freaking amazing. A lot of Canadian listeners. Any country, do it. And I will send you a card. And if you're in the U.S., you will even get a cool little Wex stamp on the back.
I'm surprised any Canadians are listening to a kid from Boston, considering that Canadian hockey and American hockey, just especially like Bruins hockey,
it
doesn't get along all that well.
Maybe they forgave you.
Especially people from like Montreal. I can see Vancouver a little bit, but you know,
they still like you, Blake. Or maybe they just like to listen to you and then write you emails.
You know what we should do? Actually, we should come up with a goal. What's the number that you want to set by the end of the season? Like we're already at 233.
So of reviews on iTunes right now?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, we are. We're at 233, and today, the day we're recording, is Friday, May 13th. So you're saying by the end of the season, and we have 8 more episodes.
So in 8 weeks.
I want to get to 250.
250?
Yeah. Do you think that's a reasonable goal?
I was thinking that you were actually going to go higher.
Oh, you want 275?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I want 275.
All right, so... just a reminder, my birthday was last week. So if you want to give me a birthday present, guys, write a review and I'll mail you a card. Okay, enough of this banter.
You should write about Scrubs, too. That's what I want to hear.
All set. All right, let's get it.
People loved your Scrubs, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, people really want to listen to their feedback, too. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
first piece of listener feedback comes from Alyssa Carolyn from our website. She actually went on outlandercast.com. She said, I just found your podcast and enjoyed it so much. I'm a New Hampshire myself, although I'm originally from Ireland. Wow. I love you guys. I love that you guys love Outlander as much as I do and dissect the episodes in such a thorough and entertaining way. I'll be tuning in from now on. Thanks, you too, from a new fan. Thank you so much, Melissa. And you get a special sound of your own.
Yes, we do. Yes, you do. And it is this one. It's going to ruin the music, but it's... Well, you know, I'll let it play out. I'll let it finish. Here we go. Come on, it'll finish in a little bit. Come on, Bear. Oh, well, here we go.
Welcome!
That one is for you, Melissa. And I also, I included this too because I wanted to let you know that I actually went to college in New Hampshire. I went to the wonderful St. Anselm College in Manchester. Well, technically it was Goffstown, but they're not proud of the Goffstown moniker, so they say that they're in Manchester. So yeah, I went to St. Anselm College, just to let everybody know, and welcome to the family.
Mary Anderson wrote on the website, Blake, I want you to remember that Jamie and Murtaugh are Highlanders. They are hardcore warriors and live by a strict code of honor. Jamie's more than a friend. He's Murtaugh's laird. Murtaugh doesn't want or need Jamie to comfort him or be a friend to him. Jamie knows this Highlander code. So if you will entreat Murtaugh with the greatest respect, he gave him a chance to redeem himself by giving him responsibility. I loved the way that Jamie became
the laird.
Okay.
This episode. I think that's how she finished it. Listen, Mary, I totally agree with you. I actually like how Jamie gave him.
I was confused because her name's Mary. Okay.
Yeah, I gave.
You're looking at me, and I'm like, "What? What are you?"
Well, who else am I going to look at here?
I don't know. Okay, Mary Anderson, you're saying.
Yeah, listen. I agree that Jamie gave him an opportunity to rectify the situation. The only issue that I have with this whole laird thing is that they have not explored a whole ton about how Jamie is Murtaugh's laird. They've only really explored the relationship as they are friends or godfather, godson, if you will. And to go from all of a sudden, you know, being bros to then all of a then suddenly becoming laird, it's a little jarring. And I think that's the reason why I found difficulty.
Yeah. Well, especially you as just a show watcher. I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. Right. There's nothing that led you just as a show watcher and to kind of grasp that.
And the one time that we did see Jamie as Laird, he kind of screwed it up. He got drunk. He wore his dad's jacket. Look at, remember that? Wearing my dad's coat. You know, remember that?
Yeah.
He wore his dad's coat. He got drunk. He slapped Claire on the butt. And they talked about elephants. And he screwed it up. So going all of a sudden seeing Jamie as this laird is a little difficult for me.
Anna Lenave, is that how you would say it?
Lenave?
Hi.
Sure, why not?
Says, folks, thanks for your podcast, new listener. Oh, you get a sound too.
Wow, there we go. Where are you? Where's my new listener?
Ding, ding. There we go.
There
and
it
book
is.
Reader. One of the weaknesses of Outlander from the books is that there is absolutely no way that I understood why Claire would want to be with Frank. The books paint him as a controlling, distant, and frigid. The King of Men wins. Hands down, no contest. What Ron Moore and his writing team, along with the amazing Tobias, has done is give us a really reason to care. Last season's episode of his despair at her disappearance, the scene of him at the stones calling to her, his kindness to her in season 2, episode 1, made us feel for him more. Something Diana failed to do in the series. A big problem for me as a reader. So kudos to all. It makes for a much better story.
Oh, you know what I have to say to that? This is what I have to say. I mean, really, this just made me feel absolutely perfect when I was reading this.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
No wonder you put it in the Google Doc.
I mean, that... And I'm not saying because I'm favoring Anna here. And again, you're a new listener. Thank you. Welcome to the family. It's because she's right. It does make for a much better story. Who wants Claire to have an easy decision? Who wants Claire to say, yeah, Jamie's my man and that's it? When she is struggling with the idea of keeping Frank alive or choosing Jamie to let him kill BJR, that is compelling. And if you didn't care about Frank and you didn't know that Claire cared about Frank and you didn't empathize with that, you may not agree with it, But if you didn't at least see that there's an argument to be made there, then there's no drama. And if there's no drama, what the hell are we all doing here, right? Does that make sense?
I don't know, to be honest. It's a Claire Jamie story. And the show has definitely put in a heck of a lot more Frank. So I get you. I get, for especially this last week's episode, for us to care that Claire worries about Frank. You're right. We need to have some feelings for Frank.
You'd be looking at Claire and you'd be like, why is this even a choice?
Okay. I can appreciate that.
You know?
I can.
Okay. From the emails, Sandra Louise White says, I hate to be the great defender, but having read both Outlander and Dragonfly and Amber so far, the nature of these huge books and TV adaptation medium unfortunately means it's going to be spotty until the crux of the plot is in motion. As awesome as Outlander Season 1 was, we gotta remember that the series was episodic and visually beautiful in its tourism, yet not very eventful until Episode 6. But we still loved it. So if we're getting ramped up here by episode 5, I'm cool. This portion of the novel was divisive to readers too, so I think they are doing as best as they can. Listen, it's not Game of Thrones. It's a slow, focused burn, decidedly loyal to its source material, but I think it will continue to pay off.
Kim said on our email, a lot of us wondered why they even had Annalise walking with Claire in the park. Why not Louise, who is a real friend? Anyone could take her there to run into BJR. Mm. We were also kind of surprised Claire didn't say anything with more bite to it when Annalise... Is it Annalise?
Annalise, saying, whatever.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
I taught students with both of these.
Oregon,
names.
Both Oregon.
Both ways of saying it, yes. why she was going on about how Jamie was so much more fun and carefree when she knew him. I mean, Claire certainly schooled Leary, a.k.a. Leghair, after all. Mm. Another Outlander fan I chat with made an observation that I found interesting and maybe explains why Annalise was important as the person to play that part, and I thought I'd share. Okay. So here's what her friend said. Mm-hmm. So you have Annalise, someone else who knew Jamie before BJR, blathering on to Claire about how Jamie isn't the same man that Annalise knew. He was fun and less serious, etc. Ooh la la. She's right, of course. He's not the same man. And it's not just because Claire took away his virgin card or because he's grown up and he's married with a baby on the way. He isn't the same Jamie because of what BJR did to him. He isn't that innocent, carefree young guy anymore because of the rape and the torture he suffered at the hands of BJR. Maybe Claire's reaction to Annalise is more due to guilt she feels over what happened. And she's probably thinking, girl, you wouldn't be the same either if you'd been through what he's has. When I watched that scene, Claire seems sort of defensive and her facial expressions were drawn and tight-lipped. And then you have those thoughts in her head. And then what happens? She turns around and sees the very source of Jamie's torment walking right towards her. I don't know if the writer meant it in that way, but it sure makes BJR showing up right then even more of a statement. Man. Holy smokes. You know, I hadn't thought about that. Annalise, whatever, I can't.
French girl.
She was his, you know how everyone says like your life is a chapter book?
Yes.
And you go into a next chapter? She was his early carefree chapter.
Right.
And maybe Claire was thinking this. Maybe Claire wasn't just thinking, yeah, he's had sex with me, but yeah, he has a lot of stuff. He does have a lot of weight on his shoulders and you don't even know the half of it.
Yeah. And how much of it is her fault?
And then she walks into freaking BJR. That right there, whether that was intentional or not, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Kim. And thank you so much, Kim's friend. Awesome.
Nameless friend, but thank you.
Kim's friend. Awesome. My mind is blown, and that's how I'm going to watch that scene from now on.
This one comes from Christine, and it says, it's taken me some time to reflect on this oh-so-powerful episode. It is the emotional episode we've all been waiting for. As for the Kilt ratings, she is going with a 4.75, as it's a little too early for a 5 Kilt rating, but this was by far her favorite episode of the season. So to set a GBG has been terribly difficult for such an amazing episode. Hers, however, are based on 3 favorite lines in the episode. Good. Fuck the king! Claire spit through her teeth with such venom at BJR. That is my girl. Proving once again what an incredibly strong woman she is. I love her even more. She will take nothing from no one. It's funny that you say that, too, because she did take a little bit of a pounding from Annalise or Annalise or whatever before this. But I do agree with that. Bad. How awful I felt with the last line in the episode. Do not touch me. This is the true separation that the writers have been alluding to all season. Now I really feel it. I have cried each time I watched that scene. And great, my level of disgust at BJR. First greeting to Mrs. Frazier. Claire. Oh my God, just like Frank. I heard Frank from episode 101 when BJR spoke, and it gave me the willies. That's the first time I've ever heard somebody say the willies in like at least a decade. It was ultimately creepy, and my skin is still crawling. And she added an extra here. She says, the best part was my non-book reading husband's assessment of Jamie as a man. When we talked about the episode, he was drawn to Jamie's response to Murtaugh's guilt over the attack on Claire and Mary. He respected Jamie's ability to stop and truly listen before reacting. He didn't jump to an offer, it'll be fine. Jamie understood the lost. Excuse me. Oh my goodness gracious. Blakeism. Jamie understood Jamie's ability to stop and truly listen before reacting. He didn't jump to offer and it'll be fine. Jamie understood the loss of honor Murtaugh felt and gave him a way to regain it. He saw Jamie as the leader he is. Yes, my husband is amazing, by the way. Oh, who do you think you are? Me? I'm the only one who can just throw superlatives at my wife like that. All right. What do you got on Facebook, my love?
Ashley Green Richardson, love her. She says, no, I don't want no scrubs. You know what makes me feel old? The fact that that song came out like 17 years ago. I hear you, Ashley. Bob Lovelace said, ever since the podcast, I've been thinking about the final scene with Claire and Jamie. While I sympathize with Mary's view, I think I have to side with Blake on this one. Claire was being somewhat selfish. One, she broke up a potentially happy marriage between Mary and Alex for her own gain. Alex seems like a kind soul who would have most likely treated Mary well. And as a result, poor Mary Hawkins is going to have to end up with BJR, who undoubtedly will abuse her. Two, she has again derailed her relationship with Jamie due to her own selfishness. If it were not for the baby, which is definitely complicates things, Jamie should have asked her to choose me or Frank. Mm-hmm. Number three, Claire is carrying on this strange extramarital affair after being married to two men thanks to time travel. She must know in the back of her mind that things are not going to end well in the 18th century, so she wants to be able to return to Frank, who she clearly still loves. Yet early on, she had a chance to go back in 1948 and she chose not to. So I have to ask, who is really Claire's true love? What is Jamie really to her? I'm starting to ask those questions. Wow, Bob, these are not questions that I ask myself, Bob. So I do not think you're a book reader, Bob, because in the books, there is absolutely, positively no doubt who her true love is.
Well, here's the difference, though. But we're not talking about books.
Here. I know, and that's why I'm like, it really, wow. Like what you were saying earlier about how the show is giving so much more power to Frank.
Right.
How it is making, and my mind is blown. And all other book readers are probably sitting here like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
Everybody's probably angry about it.
I don't think angry. I sit here more and I'm like, oh, Blake, you're so precious. But like, no, she loves Jamie.
But
she loves Frank too, I know. But the question of who is her true love, that's...
I think I'm willing to concede the fact that Jamie is probably her true love. And I don't want to even really want to say probably. I think he is.
He is.
But there's an argument to be made here for Frank. And that is what makes this television show or the drama behind the show so spectacular. That's what makes this a difficult choice. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that you have to choose Jamie Gay, you have to choose Frank. We kid and we talk about Team Frank, Team Jamie, but you don't have to. You just at least have to understand the perspectives of both. And I think that the show is doing that.
Well, you know, Bob brought up a really good point. Claire is, you know, having things in her mind because whether it's an extramarital affair or not, she is kind of married to two men. She wears those two rings. And then she had that totally effed up thing happen with Master Aemon where he says, you're going to see Frank again. So that's really screwing with her mind. And she's pregnant. Okay.
Yeah. So the hormones are raging.
I said it last podcast. I'll say it again. My pregnancy periods in my life did not make me the most sane person. Okay. So if Claire is just told by Master Aemon, you're going to see this guy again, she's like, what the hell? And then she bumps into Mary Hawkins. What the hell? Claire is just going off the deep end in hormone land. So
I will refrain from commenting.
Yes, you should. And I will just comment with the next Facebook comment by Rosemary Knight. Rosemary Knight wants to point out that only one of Claire's attackers recognized her as La Dame Blanche and told the others. That's what I said too.
Yes.
But the person who arranged the attack didn't necessarily know of her reputation. That person knew that she'd be working at the hospital and knew that she would have to be going home. So it's possible that the attacker who recognized Claire was the only person who overheard Jamie at the brothel. So no one is eliminated from the suspect list, not even the Comte.
The Comte, yes. Okay, I see the logic here, and I get it, but the Comte is too easy. It's too, this is going beyond the story and what they're showing you. Something else is happening here. It's too easy to blame it on the Comte, and I refuse to accept that. Waverly Wicks Ford says, Blake and Mary and others who know such things, what do you say about this? Do you think Outlander will be judging popularity of the show by live viewing numbers? They have made it available on so many different venues, but don't they have to take those numbers into account? I have stars through Amazon, so I'm not even able to watch it live. I think they have to take all the numbers into account, and Amazon must track viewing also. What do you think? And I'm sorry if this is already something you've addressed, and I just didn't hear it or see it. Well, you see, here's the thing. Yes, they do track live numbers. They also track DVR numbers, Stars does. Through a thing called the Nielsen rating system, whatever. It's
I hate Nielsen.
Nielsen sucks. And actually, Fox is no longer even using Nielsen. Fox, the network company, they're not basing their shows on the live viewing numbers anymore. Just because people don't watch it live anymore. I can tell you guys that very rarely do Mary and I watch it live. Mainly because of kids and
children,
all that other stuff, and the fact that they're just one day at a time ruining our lives. but are our views being tracked? Now, I think if you're watching it through the Stars Play app, they're probably tracking that on their own end. And I'm sure that Amazon probably has a deal with Stars that they will share the numbers with them. But we aren't privy to those numbers. Kind of like how we're not privy to like the numbers from Netflix. Netflix doesn't have to report them.
Yeah.
The only reason why you even see ratings at all is because Nielsen reports them publicly.
Waverly Wicks Ford, you know, I think as long as we're watching, and even if you watch it several times, you can think of it as a vote. You may have an absentee ballot,
yeah,
but it's still being somewhere. So when you hear these numbers, when you hear the numbers about the live viewers, don't let it harm your soul. Stars knows how many people is watching.
Yeah, and the numbers are all in context too, right? So like I've talked about this ad nauseum. The Walking Dead, the season 6 finale had over 20 million viewers, right? But that's on AMC. Game of Thrones, which is probably just as much as a cultural zeitgeist as The Walking Dead, you know, it's probably in the 10 to 15 million range. But every other subscribing show from the subscription networks like HBO and Showtime or whatever, you know, they're averaging probably between a million to 3-4 million at most. So if Outland is doing 1.5 to 2 million, they're doing relatively well in the context of subscription network ratings. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you see 1.5 million and then you see the 20 million number from The Walking Dead, you got to look at it within context here. And that's why I want people to realize.
Catherine Arsvan Wessup, on, is this Facebook still?
Yeah, yes. It's Facebook, yes.
On Facebook said, so is anyone else wondering how the hell BJR got to Paris so fast?
Oh, I love this question.
How do you say that word? Interceded? What the hell does that even mean? Interceded. To take care of Alex? Is that
sure, whatever.
Do you know what that word means?
Don't, just keep reading.
You don't?
Just keep reading.
That makes me feel so much better. Okay. Fast interceded for Alex. It has only been days since Alex was dismissed from the Duke's employ. Not weeks. I think he was already there, having been summoned by the Duke to set a trap for Jamie. I believe the Duke engineered this entire encounter to lure Jamie into a duel, knowing that it is illegal and that he would be arrested. Remember the comment Jamie made about some of the prisoners having been at the Bastille for decades and the Duke's response that life can be harsh? I think this is a foreshadowing. The Duke likes having options. How would a British officer even be allowed at Versailles unless he was the guest of someone like the Duke? The Duke asked Jamie to help him choose horses and made sure BJR would be there and that there would be an encounter. Did you notice after Jamie had inspected all the horses on display that the Duke wanted to see more? I think that was to delay Jamie to give BJR time to run into Claire. I don't think BJR was surprised to see Claire. The way he said her name was not a question or filled with surprise. That is my theory. Any comments? Holy smokes, Catherine. Yes.
I think that all holds water, although I will say I think Blackjack was a tad surprised to see her. The way he reacted to me, it was like, I can't believe that this all came down. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't, like, you have to see how special this is. The fact that we are here. This is serendipitous.
The Duke seemed so much like he didn't care about the horses that when this kind of went down, I'm sitting there saying, do you actually want to buy a horse? Like, why are you shopping for horses?
Yeah.
You don't actually look that interested.
Right. And here's the thing, too. He says to Jamie, I can't believe you can judge horse flesh so well when you aren't the best judge for men's character.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is more about the prince and the fact that Jamie is backing this guy.
Yeah.
And it also shows how the fact that the Duke is double dealing here.
Oh, he totally is. As he even said, I like to have my options. Do you think that the Duke invited BJR?
I think BJR was invited.
By who?
But I don't know if it was by the Duke. And largely because when you go to French court or court in really any kingdom, you kind of have to be invited by someone that frequents court. Unless you stand out on the outskirts of court, and then if you're lucky to get in, you're lucky to get in.
Oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have to worry about court. This sounds very confusing.
I know. So was he invited? Possibly.
How else would he have gotten in?
But here's the thing, though.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Why would the Duke invite him? Is it just because of Jamie? And why does the Duke want Jamie to be screwed up by inviting Black Jack Randall? What does the Duke gain? And then you say, okay, well, maybe he invited BJR because he has that existing relationship. Sure. But then, again, what would the Duke gain by inviting Black Jack Randall? Because Black Jack Randall is going to the king and begging for his brother's job back. Now, if the Duke doesn't want to be embarrassed by Alex Randall, then what the hell is Black Jack doing there if he's invited by the Duke?
Interesting. Valerie Knight on Facebook says, has anyone noticed that if you remove all the flowers from Claire's garden dress, the bodice closely resembles the khaki military uniform from World War II. So that brings this into question. Who is she going to battle against? BJR or perhaps Jamie in the final scene? Either way, it is an interesting choice of costume.
I love the forethought into that. I think that's great. The thing that really got me going about this costume was the gloves. All I kept thinking was dishwashing gloves. And I know that's rather base and rather coarse of me to say.
I freaking love dishwashing gloves. I would wash so many more dishes if I was wearing gloves.
Yeah, we got a dishwasher. You don't need them.
I hate wrinkly fingers.
I know that. But we got a dishwasher. What do you need that for?
On Twitter, Crooked Knits, a.k.a. Steph, says, who needs music at the gym when Mary's singing you No Scrubs on Outlander Cast? Hashtag gym tunes. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy.
Audrey Miller says, she has rewatched the episode. Well, she's lost track, but it's likely 30 times or more. Is there something clinically wrong with me?
The wedding episode 30 times or more. You know, she's not alone.
Okay, well, okay. Now, if you're watching the wedding episode 30 times or more, that probably means you're watching the other episodes at least 10 times. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you're going to watch it a third, who has the time to watch
it? A lot of people. There's actually a new blog post up on the Outlander Cast blog about people who love to rewatch a lot of times, and I even posted it up on Instagram. Tons of people, Blake. And I just don't have lives because we have kids.
That's true. And Audrey,
it's hard for us to even watch the episode.
Actually, Audrey, I'm not making fun of you when I'm saying this, but like, that's a lot of time. Like, that's 30 hours worth of television.
That's amazing. That's like my dream right now.
Oh no, I know.
I want a glass of wine, a big king bed all by myself with no babies.
Screw you, Blake.
And I just want the wedding episode on recap, on repeat for 30 times.
Just on loop. No, and
that should have been my birthday present.
Here's the other thing, too. Okay, you're watching that 30 times. You probably got some other things that you're watching over and over again. Do you watch any other television? And if you are watching other television,
tell us what it is.
Tell us what it is, and like, how many times are you rewatching that? I think that's really cool, actually. That's why I'm curious.
We are jealous of the fact that you can watch it that many times, because we get to watch the episode way too late. Charmin Youngblood at Charmini says, how did Annalise know that BJR was staring at Claire from that distance? Claire's back was turned and Annalise is hot too.
Yeah. How did she know? I mean, he could have been staring at her, which makes you wonder. Is Annalise like a plant? Mm. I don't know. I don't know. Like, why is she all of a sudden just pointing this guy out?
I do not like her.
I don't know. Mandy Taylor, show favorite, has rejoined us finally. She caught up with the podcasts.
Yay.
And she said that Jamie gave Murtaugh what he needed, a path to right the wrong Murtaugh perceived, restoring his justice and self-worth. I like that a lot.
Me too. Oh, this next tweet makes me so excited.
Oh, I love this tweet.
Go, Blake, go.
I love this tweet. My boy, Richard Kahan, he tweeted at us, and he wanted to let us know that he thanks us for the love that we sent him on the last episode, and he's sending it back to us. Thank you, Richard. And just so we all know here, for sure, he says, Blake, we're totally bros. And you know what I say to that?
Bam! Just like that.
That is awesome. Richard, we are bros. I appreciate you. I love you.
Do you know that someone put a side-by-side picture of you and Richard?
Yeah, it was Denise. She's I they could at least be cousins. If you go onto the Outlander Cast Twitter, it's there too. I think it's on the Facebook page and in the clan gathering. Denise put our pictures together.
Thank you, Denise.
She's amazing. Terry. Oh, I love Terry. She is a fan of ours on the Living Reminders podcast for The Leftovers, and she has followed us to Outlander Cast. She says she thinks that Claire should not be messing with the future. And Laura Lee responded to her by saying, unless her messing with the future is how the future becomes the future.
My head is hurting.
Hashtag timey-wimey.
E. Anderson 960 on Instagram said, in the garden when Jamie walks up and the king says, ah, Lord Brock-Torque. How do they even say it with like a French accent? Anyway, Lord Brock-Torque. Jamie seems to be... Do you know what I'm saying? I can't do a French accent.
Could you please just try that again?
I can't. It's like all like coffee and like nasally and yet fancy. I can't do a French accent.
Sounded like you were choking on chicken.
I was trying to... You know how they have like a phlegmy sound a little bit? I can't. I'm sorry for any of you who are French. I can't do your accent. I'm so sorry. Anyway, when the king says, Lord Brock-Torque.
No, say it.
No,
come on.
I can't.
Try it again.
Nope. Jamie seems to be towering over Blackjack Randall. What a great presence. You could feel the tension between our three characters. Awesome job. The last scene between Jamie and Claire is just like in the book, except he doesn't break the glass, the plate glass window. So much emotion and heart. Great acting by all.
Addicted to Dirt Track says, I don't know about anybody else, but when Claire, Jamie, and Blackjack were standing side by side, I had a knot in my stomach. And my mother-in-law called me, and all she could say was, oh, shit! Awesome.
Ally Katie wrote, excellent episode. Her good was the tension as they met BJR again and the fact that they had to be so restrained because they were in the presence of the king.
That was the best way they could have introduced him.
Gosh, watching him be humiliated, forced to his knees, was such a satisfying moment. Ally Kate's bad. I didn't like how manipulative Claire was throughout this entire episode with Mary and Alex, and lastly, with Jamie. She is very much Team Frank in this episode. And Ally Kate's great was Sam Heughan in that final scene. Giving some snaps to that, I agree. One of his best acting moments to date in Outlander. You could see and feel the pain and hatred Jamie felt at being put in this position. Jamie has given his soul to Claire, vowed to love her and protect her for all of his life, and suffered greatly for it. And this probably felt like the ultimate betrayal. And this is where she got manipulative. Mm-hmm. She played on Jamie's honor by calling it in as a debt. Ugh. She knew that was the one definite way she could get him to do it. And he hated her for it, as evidenced by the don't touch me at the end.
Oh, Claire. That was not cool.
What does Denise say?
Oh, Denise. She says, good. Once again, can we please say Bear McCreary? Between bringing in Frank's theme and the falling off of the Jamie and Claire theme at the end, breaking of the relationship and slash trust, just fantastic. The bad was Claire coming between Alex and Mary for Frank's sake and Annalise's clothes. Really, not digging them at all. Oh, and shifty-eyed Jamie when he learned of the Comte and the Prince leaving the dinner together. Direction or his acting, it just didn't work for me. And the great was the whole rest of the show. This is a 4.9 kilt rating for me, especially because Jamie is finally wearing a kilt again.
And on that note, it's time for the tweet of the week.
Let's do it. This week's tweet of the week comes from Christine Romeo, and she says, hopefully Claire won't set Alex's house on fire like Left Eye did. Scrubs! And that is the reason why you got...
My gosh. So for those of you who don't know the song Scrubs by TLC, nor have you watched the music video, just do it. Just go on YouTube. And you'll get why Christine won this week's Tweet of the Week.
And Left Eye burned her ex-boyfriend's house down.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Left Eye was obviously part of TLC.
Yeah.
And wow, that was great. So, Christine, for getting this week's Tweet of the Week, you get a $20 gift card to the Tag Your It Etsy shop. Talk with Dawn. I will put you in touch with her via Twitter. And Dawn's amazing, the owner, and she will take care of you straight from the beginning. So once again, Christine, congratulations on winning this week's Tweet of the Week. My love, are you ready to get into the voicemails?
You bet.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, Mary and Blake, this is Denise. This is more for Blake. I just had to call you out on the Jamie and Murtaugh scene. You were saying, kind of busting Jamie up a little bit because he wasn't feeling sympathy for Murtaugh.
Hold on, wait. Denise, you call me out too. You can't have my back. That's fine. No problem.
Murtaugh wouldn't have that, I don't think. Murtaugh is the type that wants to take care of things. He doesn't want somebody feeling sad for him. So if you watch Jamie's face and Murtaugh's face, Murtaugh's like, you gave me your trust, and Jamie says, but you were outmanned. And Murtaugh is like, but I can't forgive myself. He doesn't want somebody to say, hey, man, it's okay. You know, you did what you can. He wants somebody to give him purpose, and that's exactly what Jamie did. So he says, I can't forgive myself for what happened or what could have happened. And Jamie says, then you keep after him. And that gave Murtaugh purpose. That gave him something to go back for and something to make it right. And if you see Murtaugh's face after he's given that challenge, Jamie gave him everything by doing that, as opposed to saying, hey, man, it's okay. You know, you were outnumbered. So that's all I really had. I just kept thinking about that scene, and I actually sat here and rewatched it. And that's my take on the Murtaugh and Jamie. So we'll see what Murtaugh does for them. All right, talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thanks, Denise. Thanks for piling on. Get in line, will ya?
Hi, Mary. Hi, Blake. This is Faye. I'm recording from Norway. I just finished watching the episode Untimely Resurrection, and I have to say this has been the most incredible episode of Outlander ever.
Yay.
I rated 5 billion kills. It was incredible. It had me at the edge of my seat. I didn't want it to end. Oh, I just have finding it really hard to express myself right now. I am a book reader. I've read the first 3 books of the Outlander series, but it was such a long time ago that I don't remember a lot of the details. So the things that happened in this episode, for example, I had absolutely no recollection of. So I was watching as if it was the absolute first time and couldn't believe my eyes and my ears. It was fantastic. While I know what happens at the end of the book and at the end of the next book, I don't necessarily remember how we got there. So I still get to enjoy it like it's the first time hearing of it, which is really exciting. I have to say the best part, the great in this episode was King Louis making fun of Jack Randall. That was incredible. I love him so much right now. He couldn't have made me happier if he'd done anything else. The good was just everything in the episode in general, and the bad was that it ended. It was best. It was fantastic. I love it. I love it. I love it. 5 billion kilts. That's it. Thank you, guys.
Woo! That one got me fired up, baby.
I know.
Faye from Norway got me all fired up for this episode.
That was an awesome voicemail. So enthusiastic.
Love it. 5 billion kilts. I think I can officially say that as the first 5 billion kilt rating I think we've ever had.
I would agree.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Peggy from Newton, Mass. Hiya.
That a girl.
Real quick. Awesome episode. I'm going to have to go with Blake on the 4.8 because I did need it to be a little bit longer. The writing was exceptional. The directing, awesome. Cinematography, fantastic. Sets, as usual, awesome. And I just had a quick question. Actually, it was a thought, and I wanted to see what Blake thought about it. Like, how do you think Richard Cahan, what are your thoughts on the fact that he was an actor and now as a writer has a little more thought process than the usual writer who wasn't an actor before? I want to see what you thought about what that meant for the script, as far as the way that he wrote the script and the way that he had his thought process because of the fact that he was an actor before writing the script. That's pretty much it. All right. Have a great weekend and hi to Godzilla and the little one. Bye.
Well, first of all, I want to let everybody know that Peggy and I, we got a good relationship. She's special to me because she's from Newton, and that's where my family is from, in Newton, Massachusetts. That's our bonding experience. We're like two of the same people, which is fantastic.
Two peas in a pod.
Two peas in a pod over here in Massachusetts. Listen, it's funny that you asked me that question, Peggy, and I'm glad that you want my response to it. And unfortunately, I'm going to give you a non-answer. I will give you a slight answer in that I think what Richard is able to do is get into the mindset of the actor a little bit more. You could call him an actor's writer, if you will. And he, I think, has a good grasp on how to communicate emotion because he can tell what actors are capable of and what they aren't capable of. And the reason why I'm giving you a slight non-answer is because we actually interviewed Richard Cahan before the start of this season, and he actually speaks directly to this question from us. So if you have not gotten a chance, or Peggy or anybody in the listening audience has not gotten a chance to listen to our interview with Richard Cahan before the season began, I really recommend that you go back and listen to it. I think it was episode 39, 40-ish. In that range, and listen to it. And we don't get into episode 5, but we get into the process of writing and what it means to be an actor before being a writer. And what does he get from being his tutor from having his tutor be Ira Stephen Bear, essentially, and why he is the writer's assistant, what his job is. So please go back and listen to that, and I think you'll get the exact answer you're looking for directly from the man himself. My bro, it's official. He told me we're bros. Richard Kahan.
Hey, it's Teddy. I'm listening. First of all, I'm driving on the Garden State Parkway. I'm past Hampton 150 North. I'm listening to your Resurrection podcast. And hold up. If Frank dies, or if Frank ever lives, let me go back to that. I think you're beating up on Slayer again. If Frank never gets the opportunity to live, how the heck would Claire find her way on Creighton and Dunn on a second honeymoon that she's not having? Because there is no Frank. And meet Jake. So, I don't know. I'm getting mixed up just thinking about it now that I'm thinking about it. All right. I don't know if I'm making sense to myself or to you at this point, but I don't know. Goodbye.
Teddy, thank you for calling in. And that is the beauty of time travel shows and movies. You can get really lost in the minutiae, and especially when it comes to something like this, which is, does Claire even get to Craignadoon if she isn't married to Frank? And why is she not married to Frank? Because he's not alive. And why is he not alive? Because BGR was killed. So it's kind of self-defeating in a lot of ways. And I think Claire should be more well aware of that. Although, you know, not understanding the physics behind time traveling at that time, and probably not being able to think it through and think it straight and clearly, because, you know, she did travel through time and she is pregnant and she's living in this time that she's trying to prevent a war, and it's kind of hard for her to understand that and expect it. So, you know, she does. I give her a pass for not recognizing it. But you're right. Without Frank, is she even really in Scotland? My love, do you subscribe to that thought?
I'm just gonna be quiet.
Good. I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think we are ready to close out this show. Do you have any final thoughts or anything before we close it?
Time travel just makes my head hurt.
All right, let's close it out. What are you looking forward to most next episode or going forward for Outlander?
Everything. I too was on the I loved this episode train. Let's keep this train going.
Right.
Choo choo.
I'm looking forward to seeing if they can keep up this consistency, if they can keep up this character development. And I gotta tell you, being a Blackjack guy, I'm really looking forward to seeing how they can, how they keep him in this story, and how they manipulate it. I don't want it to be forced. I want it to be organic. And, you know, because for all of you who have ever seen the show 24, like the character Nina, who was like the foil for Jack Bauer, they kept bringing her back seasons 1, 2, and 3. And it was like, it got forced after a while. And that's what I don't want for Blackjack. And I trust Ron more, hashtag trust Ron, to make sure they don't do that.
You got to trust Diana right now.
No, I'm trusting Ron. I'm trusting Ron.
Them's fighting words.
It is fighting words. That's fine.
Hey, but you can trust Ron. Them. Trust them both. Everything's gonna be okay.
Every little thing is gonna be all right. I think that's the first time I've ever sang on this podcast,
and hopefully the last.
What are you trying to tell me? I don't sound good.
I love you.
Oh my word!
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure, of course, to stick around on the Outlander Cast blog, because every episode, Ashley is live blogging just as it airs. So if you're watching this show, head on over to the OutlanderCast blog, and you're going to see some amazing, amazing insight.
Your two-screen experience will be phenomenal.
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to OutlanderCast.
An Emmy Award-winning podcast.
God. Not Tony after that.
Definitely not Tony. Maybe a Razzie after that. I'll give myself a Razzie for that.
Yep.
Bye, guys. Much love, as always.